sailor.
Dirtbag. This is Kid Schreiner, the voice of the Green Arrow, and you are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
The original Justice League has become a memory.
I am resigning from the Justice League.
What's going to happen to the League now?
We rebuild. From the ashes of that great conflict, a new team has arisen. A much, much bigger team.
Each of you brings something different to the table.
Old friends, new heroes. And as usual, plenty of bad guys jumping up to get beat down.
Calm down, and I'll let you go.
How about you kiss my ass?
Watch out, evildoers. There's nowhere to run. Because this year, they're all around you. The League is unlimited. An all-new original series, starring every superhero worth cheering for. And then some. Justice League Unlimited.
Where am I exactly?
Among friends.
There's strength in numbers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 149 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our Twitter page, it's Liam. Liam, welcome to another edition of the DCAU Review, the 149th one, to be exact.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, people say the 149th episode is, that's the big one, right? It's all downhill from here, so...
We finally might have figured it out here at this point.
Yes, but yes, we are excited to continue on reviewing yet another episode of Justice League Unlimited this week, and one that exclusively focuses on non-original seven Justice League characters at that.
Yeah, it's an interesting episode, that's for sure. I think it's really an encapsulation of ultimately what Justice League Unlimited became, or one of the benefits to having a show with such a large cast. And I think in one of the interviews, or maybe even one of the soundtracks or the commentary tracks for the DVDs, the creators really talked about the ability to branch outside of the heroes that they had been used to featuring. Obviously, they had told so many Batman stories and so many Superman stories, and then so many Batman and Superman with his, you know, with and friends stories. So for them to kind of make the sandbox much larger and to get out there and to really have the freedom, kudos to the network, Cartoon Network, and the people that at WB that were like, sure, take these characters that are, you know, second and third tier characters in the DC universe and do a show, because they built up so much goodwill with the storytelling and obviously the music and the animation and everything that we talk about every week. But I think this is a great example of that. And of course, I think you mentioned this week's episode, we are covering The Cat and the Canary. And that episode originally aired, according to the DCAU Wiki, at least, on February 5th, 2005, which means we just celebrated the 16-year anniversary of that episode. Liam, before we get started in breaking down this unique episode, I know you have the official Internet Movie Database description rip roaring and ready to go.
That's right, and as you mentioned, Cal, this is for the episode The Cat and the Canary, which was written by Stan Berkowitz and Robert Goodman, directed by Joaquin DeSantos, with music by the Dynamic Music Partners, and animation by DR Movie Co. And that synopsis reads as such: Black Canary convinces Green Arrow to help her save her mentor, Wildcat, from his involvement in an underground superpowered fight club known as Meta Brawl.
Hey, that's a pretty good one. I didn't find any fault with that one.
Succinct, to the point.
We didn't meander around. We didn't have any extra syllables thrown in there like we were trying to fill up a bunch of space.
Yeah, no, I like that one. And from there, I guess we can kind of jump into our plot. But yeah, it's interesting the way this story sort of unfolds. We start with Black Canary She's taking down some thugs who are trying to, I guess, smuggle guns or sell guns. It's not quite clear what they're doing, but they're up to no good. And she's waiting on backup from Wildcat, who is seemingly occupied fighting some supervillain. But as we come to find out, once she finally takes down all these guys, there happens to be a laptop left over from one of the thugs who was watching this secret internet dark web fight club, superpowered fight club, that happens to be showing the main event of that event, which happens to feature Wildcat himself.
I don't think this one's getting up again. And that means we have a winner. Still the undefeated champ, Wildcat!
What I liked about this, as we're going through here and talking about the plot, what I liked about this was that the action of the fight scene with, and we, you know, we may talk about that eventually. We're gonna have a lot to talk about in visuals, so I figured I might throw in some visual stuff here in the plot also. But they match up, they match up the fighting that that the Canary is doing with this gang, with the play by play that's happening at the same time for the fight, and you don't quite get the reveal that the Wildcat is the person that's in the fight until the screen turns around and you see them announce that it's Ted Wildcat Grant.
Yeah, I think that's yeah, it's clever. You have the voiceover of Roulette, who's sort of the villainous fight promoter, announcing the fight and talking about how this is, we're watching a legend in their prime, and the opponent just can't measure up to the fighter's skills, matched up with Black Canary just tearing through these guys. It's a really creative, fun scene. And yeah, that's sort of our jumping off point, though, is as we go up to the watchtower briefly, we see Green Arrow training out of costume. We get a good amount of Oliver Queen in this episode, as well as his alter ego. And Black Canary sort of... I would say she kind of swindles him.
well, it's funny.
Hustles him, right?
Yeah.
Like she lets him think she's not good at fighting and and so he tries to give her some pointers, and then she makes the bet where he'll help her sort of off the books without letting the rest of the league know what's going on if she can best him, and then immediately she just beats the tar out of him.
Black Canary.
Green Arrow. I've noticed you around.
I know. You happy punching the bag, or you want to go a few rounds with me? I am talking about sparring.
That'd be nice, too. You're telegraphing. You gotta center yourself.
Center myself. Got it. You're good.
You should see me when I'm trying.
I'd like that. In fact, I could use your help on something. But the leak can't know. I'll explain once we're on the surface.
I don't know. Sounds fishy.
I promise. It's for a good cause. How about a wager? If I can get out of this hold, you help me.
Deal.
Drive.
Yeah, it's great. And there's kind of a throwaway line that obviously comes back into play later on. We learn she's aware that Oliver Queen must have sold the DCAU Queen Industries or whatever his company was, and made several billion dollars. There's some witty repartee back and forth with the amount of money that he has obtained. But that, of course, comes into play later on as they are attempting to find tickets to this underground fight venue. And at that point, it appears that the Green Arrow thinks, of himself as possibly being swindled. He's already up to something, or it feels like Black Canary may be using her sexuality and attractiveness to perhaps, you know, that kind of swindle him, as you stated. So, and that only seems to continue as we move through, and she has her first interaction that we see with Wildcat.
Yeah, that's sort of an interesting little. It's a little like Han Solo misinterpreting things in Return of the Jedi,
yep.
Type vibes, where Black Canary's obviously very concerned about Wildcat, and that's sort of the Wildcat side of things is that he was this great prize fighter. They say he was the world heavyweight champion, this prize champion boxer, and he feels like he is nearing the end of his time being able to be that guy. He talks about how he's mostly on babysitting duty, and they don't even send him out of the watchtower when he is on duty for the Justice League. So he's just a guy who wants to fight, and he talks about how all these supervillains that he's fighting in the club, they all deserve a beating. So he's, in his head, he's still sort of dispensing justice while also kind of getting to relive that rush and the thrill and the roar of the crowd and all that. So it's interesting to kind of see his pride in wanting to sort of regain that past glory. And also at the same time, like, he has sort of logicked it in his head where he's like, well, I'm still fighting bad guys and doing good stuff, but it just happens to be in front of a cheering crowd while I do it.
Yeah, is that there's two conversations that happen. There's one between Roulette and Wildcat initially, where it's kind of clear that she almost manipulates him and sort of goads him into continuing and sort of presses on that idea. You know, she mentions that he's one of the only members of the league that doesn't have powers, and he doesn't even have a fancy utility belt like Batman and with all those gadgets. So he literally uses his fist, so he kind of finds his identity obviously in that past success as a boxer that he's translated into this success as both a superhero and a trainer of many of the members of the league, as we find out later as well. So it's interesting that he kind of longs for that, and then we see this interaction between him and Canary, where he is convinced that he has no role in the Justice League. He's overlooked. He's an afterthought. He's just there, as you said, to babysit. And he's worried of kind of being passed over and being too washed up. And it's not only is he sort of proving it to himself, it seems like he wants to prove the Justice League wrong as well, that hey, I still have some gas left in the tank, and I'm not going down without a fight, pun intended. You know, so it's a sort of one of those classic, you know, I haven't seen a lot of them, but it seems like a, you know, a John Wayne, or, you know, in his prime or in his later years, or even nowadays, more of a Clint Eastwood, like, hey, this guy is a legend. This guy was at one point in time the man, and now he has to prove to all these younger people that, hey, he can still go. He's still got gas in the tank here. He's not ready to hang it up just yet. And unfortunately, I mean, fortunately for him or unfortunately, this relationship that he has with Canary, which, as we mentioned, Oliver seems to misinterpret as more of a romantic relationship, but she is very clear to correct him and explain that it's a father-like relationship, father-daughter-like relationship that they share.
What are you putting me in the middle of this for? You guys obviously have your own stuff to work out.
What stuff? I'm trying to help a friend.
That sure looked like you were more than friends.
Did you think? Ted is like a father to me. He trained me, trained a lot of us in the league, and kept an eye on us when we were starting out. I owe him. Now I guess training isn't enough anymore.
So you want to get him out of this quietly because you don't want him thrown out of the league?
Or worse.
All right. But I saw the look in his eye. He's not going to budge.
Then I hope I can count on you for Plan B.
She's concerned that this is going to ultimately lead to either him getting kicked out of the league if they become aware of it, which I find it hard to believe that Batman wouldn't already be aware of an underground fight club, like an underground UFC thing that may or may not happen in the Gotham City area with a bunch like thousands of people. Like, it's, come on, like, you mean to tell me Batman isn't aware of this? But I guess he's a part-time member, so maybe he's not snitching on Wildcat's evening activities. But she's worried that this is gonna get him kicked out of the league, or really that he might die. And Wildcat doesn't care. He wants none of that. He doesn't care. And when Canary and Arrow confront him, he has no interest in stopping this underground fight club.
Yeah, it's a little the Rocky Sticks. It's a little bit the Wrestler. Couple of, you know, any movie where the old fighter or old performer wants to go out and relive their former glory and you know, still feeling like they're vital and still feeling like they have something to contribute and that they're not being utilized properly by the sort of younger generation that's beginning to replace them. I think that's compelling and sort of filtering that story through Black Canary's eyes, and then having sort of I guess the most well-known character we have to this point in the series is of course Green Arrow, who we've seen in a few episodes already, and so to see him sort of being a total outsider to this and being really sort of like, again, off put, feeling like he's being used, and then ultimately trying to figure out how exactly they're gonna stop Wildcat from continuing to fight. At first they try sort of a more direct approach where they fight off some of Roulette's henchmen, as well as a few of the other superpowered beings who are in the fight club, before kind of calling a truce and deciding to try to do a more traditional final fight where Black Canary challenges Wildcat, where if she wins, he has to retire from fighting and Roulette has to ban him for good. But if Wildcat wins, she will leave him alone, and he's sort of left to his own devices. And Green Arrow, perhaps, as I think Black Canary says right at the end of the episode, he's trying to be chivalrous, and maybe he comes off a bit more macho at the same time, but he hits her with the old knockout gas arrow and takes her place in the final fight. But we actually kind of find out there's actually kind of a creative reason beyond just he doesn't want this girl he likes to get beat up. It's because he knew that Wildcat would hit him harder and he could therefore kind of play out this plan of tasering himself to mimic the effects of death, which would sort of scare Wildcat straight from there.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we end up what ends up happening. There is a brief scene where we get a Atomic Skull versus Wildcat battle that's interrupted, and then as you mentioned, Canary puts this whole idea to Roulette about him putting his career on the line versus her, you know, leaving him alone forever. And in the meantime, Roulette gets the publicity and the money for a fight between two active Justice League members. And Roulette, of course, is all for this. So yeah. And then, as you mentioned, Arrow wiggles his way in and he takes a beating, man. Wow. Like, that, we'll talk about it in visuals, I'm sure, but golly, that guy, he took a beating and a half. It's established very early on that while he is completely and wholly a normal, non-powered, non-meta-human, Wildcat's got a heck of a punch, enough to punch through a brick wall. So that full power of those punches coming at and just wailing on poor Oliver Queen's face for 5 minutes or so was quite the scene. And as you mentioned, Oliver ends up faking his death using a taser that causes Wildcat to kind of, what have I done? Look, you know, look at his hands and decide that he's going to hang things up, much to Roulette's chagrin. Then, of course, as he's believed to be dead, Black Canary comes back into the ring and decides that she's going to say her goodbye. And that's when Oliver snaps out of it, only to trick her. And then, of course, Wildcat comes back in, seeing that Oliver is still alive, and thanks them for giving him a taste of what it would look like to kill somebody in the ring. So he's decided that he's going to hang things up. The final scene is a very, very interesting, touching one. I think it's a quick little commentary on therapy as a whole. Mm-hmm. We see them back in the watchtower and Wildcat and Canary are walking down through one of the hallways in the watchtower. And she tells him that just because he's decided he's not going to fight this way anymore doesn't mean that he has the willpower to do so. So she opens up a room where Jean, Martian Manhunter, is sitting, and it looks like they're going to have a nice therapy session. Wildcat makes a point of saying that that might be the hardest thing he's ever had to do, or way harder than fighting physically. So it was interesting. And then we get a nice little wrap up between the Arrow and Canary, where he tells her she has to buy him a coffee. So the blooming romance begins, and that wraps up the episode for this week.
Yeah. So I guess as we could kind of start getting into our scores here, I really enjoyed this episode. It's got a few different moving parts to it. Like I said, you have this sort of initial stuff with Canary and her, as you said, this sort of flirtation and budding romance with Green Arrow, but sort of within the context of Green Arrow, who's sort of been this, you know, feeling used or feeling like he's not being told the whole truth. And then, you know, it all sort of coming up again, like we said, with this story of Wildcat, you know, not wanting to let go of some past glory and kind of swallow some pride. But yeah, I think that ending really does, I think, help stick the landing too, both in the Green Arrow taking a beating to kind of snap him out of it. But then I think it's a genuine and good thing to tell the audience, especially if you think of this as something for a younger audience, to go, well, sometimes you can't just go, well, I'm not going to do that bad thing anymore. Like sometimes you need to be able to talk to somebody. You need to be able to, you know, to hash out these feelings with someone in this case, something of a professional in Martian Manhunter. And I like the idea that they aren't just going, well, that's it. That's done with. Everything's wrapped up with a nice little bow. Like they sort of established there's still going to be some work to do, but we know that Wildcat's kind of on the right path there, which I appreciated. So all things considered, I thought a pretty strong episode, and I gave Plot an 8 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, I really love this episode. I think to me the thing that stands out about it the most is that it does not have any of the original seven. There's no Batman, there's no Superman, no Wonder Woman, there's no, you know, there's no Flash, there's no Green Lantern. This is, you get a visual appearance from Jean, but he, as we mentioned, is the only member of that original seven that appears. And the fact that they did not need any of those original seven to tell a really great story, one that was grounded mostly in reality. There's not a lot of metahuman superpowers, despite the fact that Ted Grant does his fighting against metahumans. There's not a lot of superpowers that are used. It's a lot of fists. It's a lot of hip tosses. It's German suplexes. It's fighting in a warehouse. It's, you know, a lot of punching and kicking. And at the very end, we didn't mention, but Black Canary does end up destroying Roulette's arena with finally using her sonic scream that she was unwilling and unable to use for fear of killing any of the metahumans in the arena before. So once it's an empty arena, she uses her powers to destroy it. But it is a very low tech, grounded in reality type episode, and it's done with fantastic storytelling, great character development, And it's introducing two really new characters that you hadn't established before. You had established a little bit of the Green Arrow in that was technically like the first half of that first season, or what was the first season, I guess, technically. But again, it's still a fairly new character that you're developing here. And then two additional characters, and you really learn to care for those characters very quickly. And a lot of that, of course, we'll talk about in voice acting when we get to it. But for all those reasons, I gave plot a 9 out of 10. I think it's a really, really good episode. But there's a lot to it. I love the arc of Oliver's sort of, you know, he gets the chance to interact with this girl that he's been fawning over for several episodes. He finally gets to talk to her, and then he kind of gets the disappointment out of it and feels like he's being used. And then she kind of at one point does admit that she was using him, but not for the reason that he thinks that he was being used for. So and then to kind of put the bow on at the end that, hey, we're going to go out for a little coffee here. And of course we know that there's some more to come and more great storytelling with these two characters later on in the series.
Yeah. And to your point, like, I think nowadays this might be less believable because that character, the Black Canary character, multiple versions of that character have been such a huge part of DC live action television for the last half a decade or so.
For sure.
But at the time, this character had never really appeared in other mediums. So to bring her in as, you know, and sort of pull off in one episode, you kind of know everything that she's about and, you know, kind of what makes her tick, and that she's tough and smart and all of that stuff. But that she obviously has this huge heart, especially for Wildcat, who trained her. And it's, yeah, they do a great job of really giving you like a crash course and who Black Canary is in one episode. And you definitely at the end of this episode is like, man, I'm definitely excited to watch more episodes of Black Canary in them going forward, 'cause I really like this characterization of her.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really strong. And we would be remiss to mention, even though she did make brief appearances in Initiation, which you can hear in the archives at dcaureview.com, which we reviewed with James from Watchtower Database. But there was an original pitch in Batman the Animated Series, from my recollection, to do a Black Canary episode, but that was kind of put by the wayside, and they eventually brought her in finally for Justice League Unlimited. So
Yes, that was one of the victims of the Where's Robin Fox Kids mantra that in the later seasons of Batman the Animated Series, that every episode had to feature Robin. And so an idea for a Black Canary and Catwoman story was sort of left by the wayside thanks to that rule. But thankfully, the DC animated universe continued on for another decade or so, and we finally got her here.
A different Cat and the Canary story.
That's right. Ooh, I like that. There's some symmetry there.
I love it. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which will be visual and animation. Another well-directed episode here. As we just mentioned, if you're interested in hearing some commentary about the director and who's, you know, we obviously know that role from interviewing. We had Kevin Altieri, one of the directors from Batman the Animated Series, on. Mm-hmm. You can hear that episode in the archives at dcaureview.com when we reviewed Off Balance. But the director has a lot of things to do and say about the visuals of an episode, and this episode has a lot jam-packed into a 22-minute cartoon.
Yeah, it's there's so many cool little things in here. From we can get to all the little kind of C-list supervillains that show up in a minute here, but the first thing that stood out to me about this episode is that opening fight scene with Black Canary. I guess the first thing I saw was the first thing that stood out to me. But it's so cool because it's her taking on all these thugs by herself. But the way the fight is sort of, for lack of a better term, choreographed.
Yes.
Is really cool because it's not just punches and kicks. They set up that she's very acrobatic. We see her kind of flip into the scene, but then she's using like different techniques. We see her using like judo. She'll like link arms with a guy and sort of use his own momentum to kind of throw him over. She runs at one point. She kind of does like a Matrix thing where she runs up a series of boxes and lands on the guy's shoulders and then flips backwards. In professional wrestling, that's called a reverse hurricane rana or a poison rana. There you go. It's back.
You're waiting for that. We were waiting for this all night, baby.
That's right. The poison rana. I got to bring that one out. But yeah, so I really like that was like the first thing that stood out to me is the like it's a super unique fighting style compared to really anybody that I feel like we've seen up to this point in Justice League. Is just not only how that she's tough and cool and can take down all these guys at once, but how she does it. She has like really specific techniques of how she's done it and the intricacies of those movements. Again, this episode directed by Joaquin Dos Santos and animated by the DR Movie Company, but just the fluidity and kind of the uniqueness of that opening fight scene really stuck out to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it continues throughout the entire episode. I think I mentioned that we had discussed Mr. Santos's his directing style, or DeSantos, Mr. DeSantos directing style back on episode 101 in the archives, because that was something that James pointed out, the shaky cam, the more dynamic sort of movements that the characters have in his directing style. It's a very, very fluid. There's a fluidity to everything, the way that things move, mm-hmm. and the way that for lack of a better term, the way that the camera moves with the action. And yeah, that opening fight scene, it continues later on in the subsequent fight scenes. There's a scene where Green Arrow is riding on the back of a motorcycle with Black Canary, and there's a close up kind of over their shoulder. You can kind of see it's moving fast in the background, and the background sort of blurred out, giving you that fast moving idea. But it's also close ups on their faces as they're talking, wearing the helmets. There's a lot of that where there's very expressive expressive expressions. I don't know. there's close-ups of the expressions of the characters' faces, whether they're surprised or whether they're, you know, a couple of times that Green Arrow gets to deliver some of his dialogue and kind of smirk speak, especially when he's taunting a Wildcat in the final fight between the two of them. And there's a lot of those subtle little things that makes it feel very cinematic. More of that. This, I would say, the character models in this episode were a little bit off, but I think it lends a little bit to that more Eastern style animation. And that's kind of the style that I feel like Mr. DeSantos goes for, is more of that Eastern, you know, anime quick cuts, shifting cameras, shaky cam, you know, different unique perspectives from different shots. That, you know, a couple shots of Green Arrow directly pointing mm-hmm. his bow and arrow directly at the screen. Speaking of arrows, we might as well talk about the different arrows that Ollie gets to use in this episode. Also, he had a handcuff arrow, he's got a net arrow, he's got an electric arrow, a bola arrow, and of course then he used his stunner at the end that looked like it was part of an arrow as well to stun himself into a sedative state. There's a lot of cool visual clues and stuff in the background. Also, the scene in the locker room with Wildcat, I'm pretty sure there is a Rocky. One of the posters is like a very famous picture of Rocky Marciano, who was a famous boxer in the 40s and 50s. It's a cartoon version of one of those old time headshots or, you know, action poses that they would put on 8x10s. So a lot of visual stuff. I did also notice, I kept looking for some some Easter eggs in the crowd. One of the guys in one of the scenes, going up to the ticket window, I think it's after they announced that Black Canary is going to take on Wildcat, looked an awful lot like Arthur Reeves from Mask of the Phantasm. I don't know if you caught that or not, but had a little bit of a, he didn't quite have the long nose, but his facial structure very similar. And I said, you know what? If Arthur Reeves fully recovered from, you know, his deal, and we know that there's a tie-in comic where he comes back and all that stuff, but let's just say that that isn't canon, just for canon's sake. But right. If Arthur Reeves recovers and completely recovers from his run-in with the Joker, I could see him getting plugged right back into high society and showing up at an underground fight in a tux.
Yeah, why not? As we like to say on this show, canon until proven otherwise.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I've held out long enough here. Last thing I'll say about the fight and the action, that final fight scene between Green Arrow and Wildcat, again, just brutal. Lots of fists being thrown. I cannot imagine this being shown back in the Batman animated series or Superman days. It's the benefit of kind of progressing where we have in society and it being a TV Y7 children's cartoon, I guess. But it all leads to this very, very dramatic slow motion knockout of Wildcat hitting Green Arrow with an uppercut and him leaving his feet and landing in slow motion. Very much similar to a knockout you would see in a boxing movie or something like that. So lots of great visuals with that. I know you wanted to talk about the various different C and D list supervillains we have, super metahuman villains here to talk about. So I'll throw it over to you to discuss that.
Yeah, we got some real winners here. But starting out, we have Tracer. We have Sportsmaster. We have Helgramite, Gork, Evil Star, The Electrocutioner, and Bloodsport. Interestingly, there is a different version of Bloodsport that shows up in the most recent DCAU project, the Justice League versus the Fatal Five movie. The guy sort of holding the news station hostage at the start of that movie that Batman and Miss Martian deal with is also Bloodsport. So I guess there's more than one in the universe, but so we just have a bunch of like real deep cut villains, none of whom are particularly big names, but I liked that they threw in sort of another way. We talked about that, how many DC heroes we see in just kind of standing around a lot in the Watchtower scenes of this show. So to throw in a few extra super villain cameos as well as a pretty cool little nod as well.
Yeah, there was some of those cute little nods there and, guys that you wouldn't know, super deep cuts, which of course we know that's one of the things that we love about this Justice League Unlimited show is how deep into the DC, you know, media library they had to dig in order to get some of these guys out. I will, one last thing I'll say about that final fight between Green Arrow and Wildcat was when Green Arrow just continues to taunt him throughout the entire fight, and which leads to Green Arrow just before this final blow, he gives his line, "I don't have any powers and you're still too old to knock me out." And they zoom in on Wildcat's face and his eyes get wide, and then he's coming with all of it at that point, because he stares directly into the camera and just rears back. Really, really great visual there.
I don't have any powers, and you're still too old to knock me out.
Had enough, smart guy? Huh? Get up! I'm not done!
done?
I'll tell you what he's done. He's taken the fights to a whole new level. Think of the word that'll spread from this. Anything's possible here. Next time you fight, we'll clear millions.
No. No, I'm out. And this time, I mean it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we talked about the sort of brutality of that fight, even the shot there where Green Arrow's down and Wildcat's still kind of taunting him, and then he kind of rolls him over, and you see him go down to check the pulse, and he picks up the wrist, and then it drops in slow motion and kind of lays motionless, and it's this big we get this big gasp, and then it kind of cuts to the crowd, who then just lose their minds. They're so excited that they just saw a man die. I thought that that whole final fight as well is quite a bit of fun. So all things considered, I think definitely I don't think everything's a home run. I think there's something we actually mentioned maybe back in that episode 101 initiation, that especially with the female characters, I feel like there's the faces are just very round in certain shots. Mm-hmm. And like they look like they have a strange consistency to them. Still overall, I think a really strong visual episode, and I actually gave visuals a 9 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't do a lot of hating on this episode, but I think the character models were very inconsistent throughout the entire episode. They are more, it's funny, I don't know if this is disagreement alarm worthy, but I had written down like a little more angular, not round, but a little more angular at times. There's very, I think we did mention it last week during last week's episode. Also, sometimes when the shots are a little bit further away than, you know, with characters in the background, their eyes are like weirdly facing different directions.
Yes.
There's just something off a little bit about it. So as fantastic as all of those visuals were, there were at times where I was like, oh, that's not a good look for the canary. Or there was definitely some inconsistency also with the like hair placement. Sometimes her face was filled up, you know, to all the way up to like where her hairline was. Sometimes it was very small. Green Arrow's size at times seemed to be very inconsistent. Also, there were some nitpicky things that I saw about like a turtleneck, this on the DCAU wiki, about a turtleneck sliding off as if it was a button-up shirt, stuff like that. I won't like go that far about it, but there was certainly some things as far as inconsistencies in the way the characters were drawn. So for that reason, my score also same exact score as yours, 9 out of 10. Still visually a very fun, interesting, entertaining episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, even the sort of brief fight we get between Wildcat and Atomic Skull, just like he's hitting the skull over and over again, you kind of see like the jaw start to crack a little bit. He's hitting him so much, and Wildcat's hands begin to glow as I guess the radiation is starting to burn his hands a little bit. So yeah, there's some really clever little things that I think make up for some of those larger inconsistencies throughout the episode. And I think our last visual note, we'd be remiss not to mention that the man that sells the Green Arrow and Black Canary the tickets to Medit Brawl happens to look a lot like the Sacha Baron Cohen character Ali G. maybe a coincidence. Seemed pretty on the nose. So that might actually date this a little bit more than most other things were, but thankfully they don't also like try to have him do an impression or anything. So
he doesn't do Borat, it's
just or anything. Yes, like it's just a visual. It's just a visual nod. Thankfully,
it's true. All right, Liam. Well, let's move on to our next category for the day, and that is going to be our music. I believe you said Dynamic Music Partners again.
Yes, specifically Christopher Carter and Michael McQuestion are the two credited in this episode.
That's right. I think I can pencil down Dynamic Music Partners for the entire series, but yes, individually here, Mr. McQuestion and Mr. Carter responsible for this music. So I will say that there were very specific strong points that I felt that the music stood out for this. We do get the return of the Green Arrow theme, which I am all for. played in fantastic electric guitar. And then during the fight scenes also between Wildcat and some of these metahumans and the music actually in the very opening scene between Black Canary and the thugs in the warehouse, very, very strong in those things. What did you have as far as musical notes were concerned?
Yeah, I didn't have a ton this week. I did make note of the returning Green Arrow theme, specifically in the moment where Wildcat and Atomic Skull are fighting, and Green Arrow fires the handcuff arrow, and the arrow attaches Wildcat's hand to the cage. It plays quite triumphantly and all rocked up there, which is a great moment as Arrow and Canary enter the scene. Other than that, like other than some of the action music, I think I more noticed it didn't seem like there was like a strong Black Canary theme, which I feel like, and again, I don't want to pretend like music composition is easy, but so it's not a criticism, but it's just something where this character, she's such a focal point of this episode that I was kind of hoping she would have some sort of, at least like a brief refrain that sort of we went back to. But overall, I certainly didn't have any problems with the music. I just, there weren't a ton of big standout moments for me. And I ended up giving music a 5 out of 10.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I don't know if it's quite disagreement alarm worthy, but I felt like the music during the fight scenes and the Green Arrow theme were very, very strong. I thought that the music played even during that final fight scene between Green Arrow and Wildcat. I keep wanting to call him Black Cat, but it's not. It's Wildcat. Wildcat. Different show.
Very different characters. one is an attractive person in a skin tight outfit that Spider-Man's very attracted to, and the other one is Black Cat, of course. So. Boom! You gotta think I'm going right and I go left.
You got me there. That was a swerve, son. Crossover. All right. I ended up enjoying those musical touches enough. I love the Green Arrow theme. I don't disagree with you that we could have had a more triumphant or more overt Black Canary theme, even maybe a Wildcat theme as well, one that was a little more pronounced maybe than the drumming and bass that was in the background seemingly during his fight scenes. But with that said, I did make some good musical notes here. I appreciated what they did for the episode and gave it a 7 out of 10.
Nice.
All right, Liam, well, that will bring us to our final category for the day, and that is going to be our voice acting. We have a couple of returning voices here. Well, not a huge cast, actually. We have a couple of familiar voices that we'll talk about, one whom we've talked about several times already in the DCAU that we were like, hey, where have we talked about this person before? And I remember that specifically the last time we talked about her. So excited to introduce some new characters, and certainly a kind of an acting legend that you may know by name. So let's discuss today's voice cast, shall we?
Yeah, so let's start with the main villain of the piece, that being Roulette, and is a veteran actress named Virginia Madsen, who folks might know from Sideways, Candyman, sort of a legendary horror movie. More recently, she actually had a pretty significant role in the short-lived Swamp Thing live-action series, and she was quite good in that show. That show was for being a straight to DC streaming service show that tens of people were watching, she was very good on it. That show was pretty great. Would love to have seen a follow up in some way, but she plays Roulette here, and she doesn't have a big role because, again, the real villain of the story, I guess, is Wildcat's pride. So she doesn't really have to be like overly like mustache twirling evil. She's just this fight promoter who's doing whatever she can to kind of keep her prized attraction in Wildcat coming back for more when it comes to the fight. I think she does a good job. It's not like an all time great performance, but she plays a good sleazy fight promoter.
And I assume she comes back when we see Roulette
follow up in a later episode playing the same role. So we will get to see more of her as she, in her return. But yeah, there's not a lot that's asked for. I think that she doesn't, like you said, she doesn't have to be an over the top Skeletor evil villain. So I appreciate that. It's a little bit understated. It's a little bit, she has a little bit of sensuality to her voice as she's making the appeal to Wildcat, you know, to try and convince him to stay and to fight, and a little bit of devious nature and seeing her ultimate evil as she decides that really she's just concerned about the money and that's all that she wants. So when she hears that she's going to get the opportunity to feature two Justice Leaguers fighting, she is absolutely thrilled and not afraid to show it. So yeah, I think her performance is fine.
Yeah, and then of course we have Dennis Farina playing Wildcat, the late Dennis Farina. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but you talk about a guy who's just like the epitome of like, oh, it's that guy. Like, this guy has been in so many things over the years, including Get Shorty, Manhunter, Midnight Run, memorably, if you watch the Fox sitcom New Girl, he played Nick Miller's dad on a couple episodes of that. This like kind of sleazy con man character, who's quite a bit of fun on there. Just a great versatile actor. He could kind of do the more serious roles. He could do a lot of comedy if you need him to, and who did a fair amount of voice acting as well on things like the Looney Tunes show, as well as some other sort of younger programming for younger children as well. And I think he does a good job because he's just kind of, again, there he's playing this stubborn old guy. He's playing this stubborn old guy, as you said, the sort of the Clint Eastwood, the John Wayne type.
Yeah. What is this?
We want to help you, Ted. We want to get you out of here.
Why, does it look like I have a problem?
You do if you don't see what you've become here. You're entertainment for these people. The rooster in a cockfight.
Fighting is what I do, all right? It's all I was ever good at, and I'm still good at it. I'm Wildcat, the guy who fights. That's what I am.
You're so much more than that.
Anyway, I can leave anytime I want. I don't need help.
Then leave. Right now.
I'm fighting Atomic Skull tonight, and you know he deserves a beating.
Ted, come on.
Hey, I was the greatest, all right? I fought them all, and I beat them all. And now look at me. Most of the time, they keep me up in that stupid spaceship babysitting. They call me to do real work less and less. Don't you think I see where this is going? I mean, I don't shoot beams from my eyes. I can't turn myself invisible. I don't even have a supersonic bird call.
So that's it? You're angry at people with powers, and down here you get to beat on them? Am I getting too close now?
Hey, settle down!
How's this your business, huh?
Stay out of it, Ollie.
That's it. I'm done.
And I think he doesn't... There's really not until the very end does he really show much emotion in his performance, but I think that works because that's sort of the whole point, right? It's this guy from an older generation who doesn't know how to cope with these feelings of inadequacy and getting older, so he's kind of hiding it all, and then it finally kind of gets through to him right at the end when he, you know, nearly, or at least in his eyes, nearly kills someone.
Yeah, I think he's I think you can usually tell that an actor is going to do a great job if you look at their their IMDb page or their Wikipedia page, and you see that they had a role on one of the Dick Wolf executive producer Dick Wolf's Law and Order shows, as we know and have talked about many times on here. We stan Ice-T for that reason. Right. We will defend the acting chops of Ice-T to the grave. To our deaths, if you will. So the fact that Mr. Farina, who unfortunately passed away, you know, the fact that he had a role or a period of time where he was on
two different Law and Order shows, I think shows that he has quite the versatile acting range. And yeah, all he has to do is play the grizzled veteran, and that's not necessarily, didn't seem like it was a stretch for him. He was, you know, a little older as he's doing this role. So it was a role he did well. I think his voice has some character to it as well. It brings that sort of grizzled, you know, been through a lot. We don't get a whole lot of information other than he was a boxing champion for a time. We don't get a whole lot to hear about, you know, what or if he had much of a career as a crime fighter. But it's interesting that he plays that role, and we sort of get a very modeled after a old box, you know, a Rocky movie, or a mm-hmm. hero's coming back to prove that he still has some in the tank. And they picked a guy that was no spring chicken and kind of was perfect for that role. So yeah, I agree with him. I agree with you. He did a fantastic job. Brings a lot of character through his voice, through his acting, through the tone that he uses. And I think that scene with him and Black Canary is a standout as far as I'm concerned for the whole episode.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Black Canary, we'll get to our two leads here. We have Ken Schreiner, who you heard intro our show this week. Friend of the show. Ken Schreiner returning as Green Arrow. And then, of course, as we said, we have talked about her a couple of times. I think most recently on our the last episode of Batman, Brave and the Bold, we reviewed Morena Baccarin, who, of course, you would know from Deadpool or Firefly or Gotham or a million other things. Very talented actress playing Black Canary here. And I really think her strength, both with Dennis Farina as Wildcat, and with again the sort of flirtatious but still a little bit adversarial, at least as the episode goes on, with relationship with Green Arrow, I think she does a really good job kind of being, she's doing most of the heavy lifting in this episode.
Yeah, she has a lot of dialogue. She has a range of emotion that she has to show. Clearly, I mean, we've mentioned it before, she is a very talented actress, you know, kind of underrated. I think maybe hasn't had a ton. I don't know. Deadpool was a pretty big movie and she was in two of those. So maybe not as underrated as I think, but or as underexposed as I think. But yeah, she's very, very talented. The voice performance that she does in this has to show a range of emotion, from this sort of sultry, seductive type, you know, luring Oliver into this flirtatious situation in the beginning where she kind of tricks him then into helping her out. And then the next scene where she's sort of negotiating with the Ally G character for the tickets, and there's some more interaction there. And then that pivotal scene between her and Wildcat where she's sort of pleading with him to give this up before something bad happens. And then, even after that, you know, the interaction that she has to have with Oliver at the end and correcting him to let him know before then that she has a very, father-daughter relationship with Wildcat. She expresses some pretty strong emotion in that as well. And, then when she thinks that Oliver's dead too. So it's a roller coaster of emotion that she has to express. And I did not at any point in time feel like that she was out of her depth in any of the scenes. And I feel like she and Mr. Schreiner have a pretty good chemistry together. You know, his dialogue at time is could be a little choppy, I think, but for the most part, I think that they have a very strong chemistry together. And we know that continues throughout this series as we get additional episodes featuring the two of them together. So yeah, very, very strong performances from both of them. But she definitely has the lion's share and does a fantastic job, I think.
Agreed. Yeah. I think just everything we've just talked about is a great showcase for her ability. And yeah, for all those reasons that we've talked about, I went ahead and gave voice acting a perfect 10 out of 10.
That's awesome. I will say that I think my favorite line comes in the very opening scene, where she comes up to Green Arrow in the training room and asks him if he's, quote, happy punching the bag, or if he wants to try to go a few rounds with her. And then she goes, I'm talking about sparring. And he goes, yeah, that sounds good too. Like, how do they get that beyond standards and practices? I don't know. It's one of those, hey, Puddin, you want to rev up your Harley, or, you know, you want to try my pie.
Yes.
All the other Harley lines. It's like, how did these get past the standards and practices people? Very, very funny. But yeah, I also gave voice acting a perfect 10 out of 10 for that reason. Very strong, as we often sing her praises. And it's International Women's Month here, Women's History Month. We just passed International Women's Day. We would be remiss not to recognize not only the actresses that have been fantastic in this series, but the great Andrea Romano, who is responsible for the voice casting and getting the performances out of these actors and actresses that are just timeless and that create that atmosphere and the things that we often talk about when reading a comic book, or when we are comparing this, when we see the next performance of Green Arrow or Black Canary in an animated film, that we will oftentimes compare those performances to these performances because of how strong and iconic they are. So we can never give enough praise, I think, for Andrea Romano and the work that she did, especially in voice casting and getting the performances out of the actors.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam. Well, that will bring us to our final scores for this week's episode. And after I have tallied everything up here, I end up with a very impressive 35 out of 40 for this week. What about you?
Yeah, and I am just a tick lower, or a couple ticks lower, actually. I came to a final score of 32 out of 40.
All right. Well, I guess it is time to talk about rewatchability, as we always do, Liam. Where do you land as far as this one is concerned? Some threads here to continue on later in the show, but nothing I don't think that necessarily shakes the foundations of the DCAU. Where do you land on as far as rewatchability for this one?
I would say yes, because, the Green Arrow, Black Canary romance is like this, like, it's an iconic one in comics. And I think seeing the origins of it in this universe, especially because these characters come back as a duo, as a couple later on in the series, I would say, yeah. I mean, as far as like the big tentpole moments is seeing Green Arrow and Black Canary's first interaction, that, you know, important in the grand scale of DCAU continuity, probably not, but I think that giving us a little bit of an origin that we sort of see him, as with Green Arrow, sort of see Black Canary for the first time at the end of initiation. They sort of establish that he's been kind of seeing her around, so to speak. He's kind of been admiring her for a while now. And then to kind of see that thread continue here as they have their first interactions and sort of hit it off. I would give this the old one thumb up for rewatchability.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think because this is linked to one of my favorite, if not my favorite episode of Justice League Unlimited of all time, which is Double Date, which comes into play later on. Obviously, this sets that episode up very well. There's a lot of, as you said, tying this sort of from that initial sort of curveball moment that Green Arrow has in the initial in initiation, where he's got his eye on Black Canary, to sort of getting to this point where he has his first one-on-one interaction with her, an introduction to her, just sort of tying that together. As you said, it's an iconic romance in not only the DC universe, but now because of the exposure of the of the Arrowverse on the CW. It's sort of in the public eye. It's sort of across the entire superhero universe. I think it's a pretty in the public knowledge as far as romances between superheroes are concerned. So yeah, I think taking a look at the DCAU version of that one is sort of important. And it's a great story. It's not, obviously it doesn't really impact. It's not a Cadmus arc. It's not going to impact you if you skip it. But if you're looking for 22 minutes of fun, some good action, good storytelling, and you're looking for something that's sort of out of the ordinary, not featuring those original seven, you just want a good story that features some of those B and C list characters, I think this is your jam.
Agreed.
All right. Well, that will wrap us up for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We are on Anchor, and therefore we are on probably every other one of those podcast apps that you listen to. If your podcast app that you listen to us on allows you to leave a review, 5 stars or just a little note, as Apple Podcasts seems to do, we would love for you to do that. Even if you've already done so, Apple apparently lets you just leave as many reviews as you want to. So we would not turn down a second or third or fifth review from you if you are feeling generous. So share the review if you'd like. Give us 5 stars if you feel like we've earned it. Don't forget also, if you want to support the podcast, you can check us out. Go to our website at dcaureview.com. Click on the store tab. That'll take you to our website. Pick yourself up a hat, shirt, a sweatshirt, a mug. You got some stickers on there. You can support the podcast by doing so. Don't forget, you can also check out the podcast weekly on YouTube if you're a podcast listener, and you can head on over there. We are part of the Pod Tower, which just soft launched over the last month or so. You can also listen to some other content from other great DCAU content creators, including our friends at Tim Talk and the very knowledgeable Watchtower Database boys over there as well. So with that said, now comes the time, Liam, where we are going to preview our next episode. And we have something a little different next week.
That's right. So as we mentioned up top, this is 149. Next week is 150, which maybe isn't the biggest milestone, but it feels pretty important.
It's one of them.
The bicentennial episode.
Yes.
I don't think that actually works, but
sure.
Because that's 150 years. We have not been doing this show for 150 years. But regardless, we have been doing this show, actually done more than 150 episodes if you include our bonus episodes. But the 150th edition of our regular Saturday show, we wanted to do something kind of fun and interesting. And that is kind of to do it's not going to be a clip show, but it will sort of be a best of show, where we look back at our favorite things that we have reviewed in the first 149 episodes. And Cal, we may even have some special inductions into the top pick sections that from our earlier reviews, even if they didn't quite meet that 37 out of 40 threshold that is usually required there. If there are some standout episodes, either for importance or just that we personally love and feel deserve to be in there, we're going to be discussing that and just sort of, like we said, talking about some of our other favorite episodes and moments and shows and movies that we have reviewed up to this point. And that will all be next week on the 150th episode of the DCAU Review.
I cannot wait. It is going to be loads of fun. Looking forward to doing that one with you, as I do every single week, but especially that episode, Liam. It's going to be a ton of fun. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.